Sometimes the palatable and pleasant feelings in our heart appear as if they're dried up, and it seems as if we are unable to love our worshipable Gurudev as we want. Why is this happening? And what should we do when this is happening? Look, Deko. When you see that you cannot love your worshipable Gurudev the way you want, and when you get no tangible transcendental experience while hearing about him or remembering him, then you must know that you are in Maya. You are grasped by Maya, and you have fallen out of God consciousness. Such a bahirmukha condition of the consciousness is certainly a great obstacle to the progress on the path of sadhana. When such a condition arises, you must go to the lotus feet of Sri Guru as soon as possible and try to spend time with like-minded devotees discussing topics of the Lord. Then this temporary worldliness in your consciousness will be destroyed, and you will become deeply fixed in your beloved Gurudev, and you will once more be able to love him as you had wished. Number 14. How long have we been related to our father, mother, and Sri Gurudev? And who is most worshipable of them? Look, Baba, your mother and father are gurus of one of your births. He says, look, your mother and father are your gurus, okay, for one birth. But perhaps they will not be your mother and father in next life. But Sri Gurudev is your teacher and your best friend, birth after birth, birth after birth. Our relationship of topmost intimacy with Gurudev is inseparable. Your relationships with your wife, children, father, and mother only exist in this lifetime. But your relationship with Sri Gurudev continues birth after birth. Janmi Jami Hoy E Avilash. A living entity takes birth according to his fruitive reactions. The living entity is bound to his father, mother, wife, and children with the strings of family ties, so that he can enjoy the reactions to his fruitive activities. Only in this birth you can be thus bound up to your father and mother, and so on with these strings. And in the next life, you might be bound up to others again in this way. But your relationship with Gurudev is a timeless one. You are his eternal servant, birth after birth. This master-servant relationship, this sweet-loving relationship is natural. It is not caused by the evolution of some fruit of activity. When your mother and father may be together at the same place, at the same time as your Sri Gurudev, then you must first offer your obeisances unto the lotus feet of Sri Guru, then to the feet of your father, and finally to the feet of your mother. In this sequence, you must offer obeisances, Guru, father, and mother. Does Sri Gurudev have to suffer any of the reactions to his disciples' sins? Question number 15. Just like, for example, you may have someone comes to you from insurance company, signs an insurance policy for you. And then every year he comes to you and collects a premium. He says, now you have to pay. It's called a premium. You have to pay some money every year. And this man comes, Mr. Jones comes every year and he collects his $1,000. Then if your wife dies or something, then you get insurance policy, all the money for so many years. So after some years, Mr. Jones is collecting the money, then he dies. And someone comes and says, oh, Mr. Jones is not working anymore for the company, he's died. But I'm the representative, I'm collecting $1,000 now. Same company, same policy, everything same. Oh, okay, you're Mr. Smith. Okay, so you pay Mr. Smith every year. So everything's the same, but the representative changed. But the policy's the same, and the coverage is the same, everything's the same. So our understanding is that once we surrender, turn our face towards Krishna, and he sends Guru to liberate us, our relationship with Guru Tattva is eternal. We have a policy, as long as we don't become offenders or reject Guru or offend Krishna. So our Guru, he takes us along, and we may not become liberated due to our inability to follow properly or perfectly in this life. So then our Guru leaves this world and goes to the spiritual world. And Krishna may say, that's fine, you stay here, you did a wonderful service. And then from that point, from up there, because this is how it's described by Guru Govinda Swami, Sri Vandana, Guru Vandana, he says from that level, from the spiritual world, the guru is looking after those disciples. He's looking after them. And he arranges, in the next life, he, by his arrangement, by his mercy, from that, he sends guru to you. He directs someone to come and act as your guru, another jiva soul who acts as guru. Or he can come down himself again and act as guru. Or the guru may become totally absorbed and no longer take so much, you know, active role in this liberation aspect. He may become totally absorbed in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, and Krishna will send another guru. Because once the contract is established, it's not that that same jiva comes birth after birth. He has to come back to this smelly, stinking world to pick you up for 3 or 4 births. But some guru will, some jiva, some guru will come because of contract with Krishna. And then, because guru is one, and then when you finally enter the spiritual world, somehow or other, by transcendental arrangement, you will recognize all your different gurus. You say, oh, you're the first one that saved me. Somehow there'll be some recognition. Yes, I'm the first. And you're the second one, and we all hug each other. Oh, well, welcome back. It's not like, oh, you were the first one. Why didn't you come back? I was waiting for you. You'll never recognize anyway. How will you recognize? Not possible. Well, this is my understanding. And some of what he say, oh no, that's not possible. That's too impersonal. It's Prabhupada. Prabhupada's definitely coming back. I know Prabhupada's. But that isn't what the philosophy, that isn't what's taught by the acharyas. It's totally personal. But it may be some other jiva the Krishna sends. The guru is one. And then when you get back to the spiritual world, you'll recognize, there'll be some, say, oh, it's kind of like you're my disciple kind of thing. You know, like you'll, because you're all serving together. It's not like just like one guru and one disciple is off in a kunj by themselves somewhere. It's all somehow in a transcendental way. All the gurus and all the disciples are together and in their sarups, and they're all serving with Lita and Rupa Lita Sakhi and Rupa Mandri and all the Mandris and Sakhis and Radharani. And it's all very intimate. It's very unlimited. And it's all very intimate. And very, very personal. And I'm sure this is discussed here in the course of this discussion also. So we have this question. We wrote this one down. Does Gurudev have to suffer any reactions to the disciples' sins? I have already told you that although the relationship between guru and disciple is very affectionate, sweet, and transcendental, still it is full of responsibility. These are 4 things, right? Affectionate, sweet, and transcendental, and full of responsibility. When the feelings of the guru and the disciple reach the same footing of love, then, on the one hand, the surrendered disciple will experience within his heart the elevated transcendental ecstasy Sri Gurudev experiences. And, on the other hand, the reactions to the sins that are committed by the disciple will touch Sri Gurudev. On the day that Sri Gurudev accepts someone as a disciple by giving him initiation in mantras and so on, from that day there is an exchange of some amount of mental faculties between the guru and the disciple. Some of Sri Gurudev's sattvika teja, power of righteousness, is entering into the disciple, and with this, his body loses his, the guru's, loses some of its own teja. Look, just as the husband is affected by the adultery committed by his wife, and the sins of the government ministers are affecting the king, similarly, the sins committed by the disciples are instilled into Sri Guru. Therefore, the disciple should be very careful about committing any kind of sin after accepting a guru. So he's saying that there's some, in other words, when guru accepts disciple, then the karmas become overlapped. That's what he's saying here. There's an overlapping of karmas. So the guru, he doesn't have any karma. He's pure. He has sattvika tejas. He has pure power. Tejas means light or power or goodness. So that goes to the disciple. Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the spiritual master should not take many disciples unless he has a lot of tejas, unless he's very, very powerful, because some of his power will go to the disciple. He may come down. He may become weakened a little bit. And then if he takes too many, his power will go down. He can have difficulty if he's in the middle platform. If he's madhyam,
If he's Uttamadhikara, then he's completely transparent. At the Uttam Mahabhagavat, he's completely transparent. And that's what Jiva Goswami's commentary in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, that a very elevated Mahabhagavat guru, he can take unlimited disciples because he's totally transparent. He's just like, it's totally transparent. So here, so there's no overlapping of karma, so that overlapping of mental faculties are exchanged. So the power and purity of the guru goes to the disciple, and the impurities of the disciple come to the guru at the time of initiation. He accepts them. He accepts them at that time. So if his power, if he's very pure, then he neutralizes all that. It doesn't affect him. And if the disciple has become somewhat purified, that's why there's some waiting time. Like they wait, they perform some sadhana, there's some purification goes on. By that sadhana, even before initiation, purification is going on. No further sins are being committed during that time of sadhana before initiation. But he's saying here that some is transferred. Well, just like the king, just like the sins of the, it says in the Shastra that the king suffers 1/6 of the reactions of the sins of his people. He's responsible for 1/6. So there's it's a portion, it's not totality. So the holy name and transcendental knowledge takes the majority of the sins of the disciple. But some portion is also going to the guru. That's what he's indicating. Question 16. You are saying that the disciple should always remember Sri Guru's lotus feet. When we can always remember the sweet form of Sri Gurudev alive in our minds, we do not have to fear any fall down from the path. Therefore, in what form should the disciple remember Gurudev? Answer. If to the disciple Sri Gurudev is really non-different from the beloved deity, then he should always and under all circumstances keep the 2 feet of Sri Gurudev in his heart by meditating on them. If he is truly full of transcendental bliss, then meditating on any of his forms will bring about transcendental bliss to the heart of the disciple. Even any object which is connected with him, which was given or used by him, will incite an unprecedented bliss in the heart of the disciple. Then the form of Sri Gurudev during the disciple's first meeting with him and the form of the guru at the time of initiation should be the special object of the disciple's meditation. Question. There is a class of sadhakas that learn the rules of discipline of worshipping the Lord and very seriously start engaging this worship, but they don't inquire much about the guru anymore. Is it good to worship the Lord like this while ignoring Gurudev? In other words, they get Brahman initiation and they just kind of get absorbed in deity worship and all the rules and mantras and tantras and mudras and everything. And not at all. That's question 17. There is nothing more ruinous on the path of sadhana than disregard of Sri Gurudev. You are a living entity blinded by ignorance. It is sheer madness to worship the Lord while disregarding that Gurudev who opened your eyes with knowledge and who showed you the path, bringing you towards the lotus feet of the Lord. After all, Guru is a very tangible God for the disciple. If anyone gives up the conception that this tangible Guru is the Lord in embodied form and goes to search for him in vaporous darkness, then the Lord will laugh and tell him, "You're wasting your time." This is what the Lord will tell him. "You're wasting your time because when I stood before you in the form of the Guru, you could not grasp me. And now I am far away from you as God in the abstract. Now you want to grasp me, but how can you?" End of quote. Thus I tell you that you cannot worship God and disregard Guru at the same time. You have not heard the popular saying, "Without Guru you cannot worship Govinda." Question 18. Why is it so important to take shelter at the lotus feet of a guru? Can a human being not attain any knowledge of God without taking shelter at the feet of a guru? Look, Baba, what to speak of understanding God You cannot get any knowledge about the mundane world without the aid of a guru. I am sure that you did not just get all the knowledge that you have just like that from nowhere. You have attained that knowledge through the teachings of your father, mother, and teachers. Without recognizing one person as more learned and experienced than oneself, it will never be possible to make advancement on the spiritual path. There is a class of people that do not favor acceptance of a guru. They spend their whole lives thinking, what to do, what to do, what to do, what to do. And they never accomplish anything in their lives. Without accepting a guru, this mental distraction will never be uprooted or removed. And as long as you have not accepted a guru, the intelligence cannot become steady. Once you will think, or one time you'll think, oh, now I'll practice yoga. Then again you'll say, oh, well now I'll practice meditation. Then you say, well, now I'll do japa. No, or maybe now I'll do this or that. In this way, the sadhaka will not be able to ascertain his own path, and he finally goes completely astray with a scattered mind. The life of sadhana cannot even commence without taking shelter of the lotus feet of the guru. We can see that there are different paths of sadhana described in the scriptures. Which one of them is the straight path? I'll just toss that gun. By His grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering and attain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from His lotus mouth. Attachment to His lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord, birth after birth. From Him, ecstatic prema emanates. By Him, ignorance is destroyed. Our spiritual master is Ocean of Mercy, a friend of the poor, the Lord and Master of the devotees. O Master, please be merciful unto us. Give us the shade of your lotus feet. Your fame is spread all over the three worlds. We take shelter of your lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Continuing our discussion of Guru Tattva, Prabhupada's tapes in New York City. When you hear tapes from New York City and Second Avenue, you hear Prabhupada speaking, then you hear in the background car horns, beep, 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 and trucks going by, beep, 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 beep. So here you hear all the sounds of construction, because that's what's going on in modern day Vrindavan. Every corner, every nook and cranny, someone's sawing marble and pounding bricks and cutting wood and building like mad. Mad passion to build houses and apartments and dharmashalas to somehow or other take shelter of Vrindavan. Guru Tattva. This is question 19. We can see that there are different paths of sadhana described in the scriptures. Which of them is the straight path? The scriptures mention the paths of karma, jnana, and yoga, mysticism, and bhakti. Those four different paths are mentioned in the shastras. Paths of sadhana. Sadhana for karma or activities, jnana, mysticism or yoga, and bhakti. Of these paths, some are hard, difficult, complicated, and hard to access, whereas some of these paths may be simple, easy, and easy to do, perform. The sadhaka should take the path that is simple, easy, and accessible. And if you ask, which of them is the straight path, then the answer is that those who follow the different paths all proclaim that their path is the straight one. Right? Those that are on the path of karma says, this is the one, karma, fruit of activities, just work and get some results. And then those that are on the path of yoga or mysticism, they say, yoga, mysticism, this is the way. And those are the devotees of bhaktis. No, no, of all the yogis, Krishna says, the bhakti yogi, he's the greatest. So if you ask them, they'll all say theirs is the best. But this does not solve the question of which path is the straight one. What is the solution to this? We think, if by some good fortune, some sadhaka attains the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, then the guru will indicate the straight path. He will indicate the path that is suitable to the sadhaka according to his disposition. This is the straight path for him. Otherwise, before taking shelter of the lotus feet of the guru, The sadhaka will be unable to distinguish which path of sadhana is the easy, simple, and accessible one. I told you previously about the bona fide guru, that he is expert, well-versed in the scriptures, and has firm faith in God. His behavior is very nice and blissful, and all great human virtues are fully present within him. That is a genuinely bona fide guru. So, basically, what's saying here is that the guru will decide what path is best for the disciple, which means that for some disciples, he may say, take the path of yoga. In other words, real guru, he knows all these paths, the paths of karma. And then we see that even in our in other words, we're all devotees, we're all on the path of bhakti. But we see that there's different, some devotees are inclined towards the jnana aspect. So then their gurudev may say, yes, you study Sanskrit. You go to college, you study Sanskrit. So they're devotees, they're following bhakti, but they're pursuing their inclination is jnana. So the guru can see that. That's why he's bringing back again. He says, what is the solution? The solution is, if the sadhaka, because there's different paths, there's different sadhanas, and there's different sadhakas, and even within different paths, there's different tendencies of a sadhaka. In other words, there's these major paths of bhakti, and jnana, and karma, and yoga. Then within those paths of path of bhakti, there's tendencies in different disciples. And we're all devotees, but some have tendencies towards jnana and knowledge. So the expert guru who's knowledgeable in all the shastras, he will engage that person in Krishna's service through this path, through this doorway. And someone else is into yoga, he will engage them through that, mysticism, and through karma. Like karma, for example, a person he owns a steel factory. You're supposed to say, oh, you come to Vrindavan, you sit down next to me and chant japa. That he may do that later. The guru may say, you do that later. But at this point, he may say, you do karma. You do karma mishra bhakti. You do bhakti, you chant your 16 rounds every day, you follow the principles, which he does, and you worship your deity in the temple. He has some Brahman to the puja in his temple. But you take the fruits of your karma, your profits of your work, and you build this temple. So that's bhakti, but there's some karma there. So the expert guru, the bona fide guru, he will engage the sadhaka accordingly. That within each path, within each of these different paths of self-realization, if one is actually deserving, they'll meet a bona fide spiritual master of that path who will train them properly. Like that, he says, if by some good fortune some sadhaka attains a shelter at the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, then he, the guru, will indicate which is the straight path for that sadhaka. Because in this phraseology, it indicates that the guru is a bhakti, you know, he's a guru of bhakti, but he may modify the practice of his disciple according to the inclination, which is the first point I meant, made. And the second, which is what is told by the language here, but the second point you could draw from what you're saying, because he'll say that is the straight path for him. See, he says, the guru will indicate the path that is suitable to the sadhaka according to his disposition, the sadhaka's disposition, that means his inclination. That is the straight path for him. So, you know, in other words, the guru sees the inclination, the disposition. In other words, he says, someone comes with his huge brain, and he's an incredible person, and he has all these capacities, intellectual capacity. He said, you just sit down and you wash the dishes and do simple bhakti, you just make garlands for the Lord. If he does that to that person, the person will just, his brain will just keep going bubbling up. I could learn Sanskrit. And so the guru, understanding the nature, what is best to bring this person to the point of pure devotion and absolute surrender, he will engage him accordingly. We saw that with Srila Prabhupada. He started different engagements to engage his disciples. He started Bhaktivedanta Institute because he saw I have a handful of very highly intellectual disciples. So I'll start an institute for them. Bhaktivedanta Institute. It's scientists, but scientists for Krishna. So that's, you know, that's jnana. Science is jnana. Jnana for Krishna. Or yoga for Krishna. Like now we're starting to have, you know, yoga classes or something, or, you know, yoga for Krishna. Keep your body healthy. Question number 20.
Sometimes we hear that it's very difficult.
Understanding mood of guru, just, we have to understand how to serve guru. And by serving guru, everything will be revealed. Now we try with our mental, you know, with our mind, material mind, try to understand the mood of guru. mood of Guru is to engage us in Krishna's service, and his mood will be revealed and we're qualified to understand. When Lord Chaitanya was in South India, he met Venkatavata in Srirangam, and he had a small son there, and Gopal Bhatta, and became Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So Gopal was very attached to the Lord and doing small services as a young boy could do. But he wanted to go to Vrindavan with the Lord. And he said, no, you wait till later when you grow up and your parents, you know, give you permission, then you can come and join me. And so he did. And his parents actually, after they left this world, then he performed their funeral ceremony. Then he came to Vrindavan and joined Lord Chaitanya. He didn't just run off. Although Lord Chaitanya is his guru, and he followed his order to stay with his parents, although he wanted to run away. So there's different examples like that. Disciple means to follow the discipline of the spiritual master. This is question 20. We see many disciples. It's amazing, these questions are questions we all... This is the 20th question. You haven't heard all of them, but many of them are questions we ask ourselves or have seen, and we maybe never heard answers, or we have our own answers. We can also give answers to these questions. But this particular acharya is giving very nice answers. We see many disciples initially showing great devotion for the guru, but finally losing their faith in him, up to the point that they sometimes simply abandon the guru. What kind of devotion do these disciples have? In other words, he's saying initially means in the beginning, they show great devotion. But then the person said, what kind of devotion was that? Well, such great devotion. Then, you know, 6 months later, he said, goodbye, Gurudev. That devotion sounds pretty shallow. It sounds pretty temporary. Look, Baba. Guru Bhakti, or devotion for Guru, that increases and decreases cannot be called devotion. We know the word devotion from our experience with English language. So we think devotion means dedication, or we think devotion means affection, or we think devotion means love, or something like that. We have some kind of idea. But devotion is the English translation of a word called bhakti. Bhakti is not of this world, has nothing at all to do with the material world. Nothing at all. Bhakti is the halo of prema. There's a halo of Srimati Radharani is bhakti. Like the halo is the aura of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani has nothing to do with this material world. You know, aura, you know, halo, like picture of Christ or something with some effulgence around him. So that is, bhakti is completely transcendental. 100% transcendental. We may have some bhakti we're expressing. Our bhakti may be mixed with karma. It's not karma mixed, you know, it's karma mixed with bhakti. That means bhakti mixed with karma. It's not karma mixed with bhakti. It's not possible to mix karma with bhakti. But you can have bhakti that's mixed with some materiality. It's impure bhakti. Or it's mixed with some gyan. But bhakti itself is completely transcendental. It's completely spiritual. And the nature of something spiritual is it always expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding. So if you actually have, quote, bhakti, or guru bhakti for your guru, it doesn't, that's what he said, how it increase and decrease. If it decreases, it wasn't bhakti. It was, infatuation. There's a word in English called infatuation. Many people here from different countries, so you have to kind of translate for each other. Infatuation means, oh, she's so pretty, or he's so handsome. You're infatuated. It's just it's some sense.
So sense. Sentimental?
No, it's not sentimental. It can be, but it's a stimulant of the senses. Infatuation. A man is infatuated with a woman for her beauty, or a woman's infatuated with a man for his riches or power. It's very temporary, very superficial. A very superficial attraction or a superficial thing. It's not deep. It's not from the soul. It's not from the soul. Just infatuation. Oh, he has an infatuation for that girl or something, infatuated. Language is a problem, but we try to. So, there's guru infatuation. I'm infatuated with the guru. The guru has some charisma. He's a great dancer, or he's a great this or that, or whatever, or he's handsome, or whatever. I mean, so we develop some infatuation, but it's not coming from the soul. It's not actual bhakti. When a person actually accepts guru from the level of the soul and expresses their soul, their devotion, their actual bhakti, the inherent quality of bhakti which every soul has within it. Every soul has bhakti. We all have bhakti within us. It's just Krishna Prema. This bhakti is there in a very seedling form. When that is actually awakened towards guru and expressed towards guru, it will increase and increase and increase and increase. Bhakti is a transcendental thing. The nature of bhakti is that it increases day by day. If for some reason the loyalty of a disciple abates or relaxes or diminishes, and his devotion to his beloved Sri Guru becomes shallow, then we must understand that his devotion is mundane. Mundane means material. It's not bhakti, it's an infatuation. His devotion is mundane, and such devotion carry defects from the outset. This language is not very clear. What it means is such devotion was defective from the very beginning. In other words, it wasn't real guru bhakti. It was just some infatuation, some charisma you were carried away by, some temporary attraction, some sensual attraction, some mental attraction, or some you were brainwashed into an attraction. Everybody in the temple said, "He's the guru, he's the guru." Yeah, he's the guru. Yeah, I guess he's the guru. Here's his picture here. Listen to his tapes, you know. And it's kind of a superficial indoctrination. And it was never really fully accepted by your heart or by your soul that this is my guru. Because to make that decision, who is your guru, is a reciprocation from the super soul. Because the super soul comes out as guru. So when you're a sincere disciple and you're praying to your super, you're praying to God in your heart, that's the super soul. You're praying to God in heart, please help me, please save me, I need guru. I understand this principle, you want to learn something, you need a teacher. You want to learn guitar, you need a teacher. You want to learn drum, you need a teacher. You want to learn anything, you need a teacher. So I want to learn how to get out of this material world. I want to learn about God. I want to learn about the spiritual world, spiritual life. I need a teacher. The teacher is called a guru. Guru means heavy. Heavy with knowledge, spiritual knowledge, purity, and bhakti. So therefore, let me find one. So we're praying to God, we're praying to God, we're praying to God. So the nearest representative of God to us, or the nearest form of God to us, is the super soul, Paramatma. So he's hearing our prayers, and he's directing us according to our sincerity and our deserving quality. He directs us to a spiritual master, a bona fide spiritual master. So that's how the disciple should come to meet the spiritual master, being directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the lotus feet of Guru. That's why the Shastras say, Brahmanda Brahmate Kon, Bhagyavana Jeev. Bhagyavan Jeev, a fortunate Jeeva. A very fortunate means deserving, a very fortunate and deserving jiva or spirit soul, bhagya, who's really crying and really praying and really trying to find God. Such a person, Brahmande Brahmate Kon, Bhagyavana Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadi by Bhakti Latavij. He will get prasad, he will get mercy from the Paramatma. He will get mercy, Krishna Prasad. He will get mercy from Krishna, who will direct him and take him to his external, to his form as guru. Super soul's external form is guru. Krishna's super soul outside of us is guru. Super soul inside is super soul. So that meeting is something transcendental. And then from that meeting of actual, from heartfelt and actual divine arrangement of guru and disciple, then something divine can develop between the guru and the disciple. Divine means bhakti can grow. Real bhakti. Such devotion can never be the faculty for the transcendental potency. Always remember that devotion is the faculty for transcendental potency. Genuine devotion to the Guru naturally increases day by day, it never diminishes. Anyone who can grasp that is fortunate. Therefore, it is said in Chaitanya Bhagavat, even if my Guru goes into a bar, bar, disco, liquor shop, my guru is directly Lord Nityananda. If your attitude towards Sri Gurudev ever alters, you should know that you have fallen from the path of sadhana. Do you know how you can advance on the path of sadhana? By placing a great example in your Sri Guru.
Sri Guru is none else but the tangible Godhead Himself for you. Remember the great words of the Lord personally spoken, Bhagavatam, which we read yesterday. Acharya mam vijaniyat navamanita karichit. 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 17, verse 27. In other words, sometimes this acharya is repeating some points because the same answer can be given to the different questions, similar answer. Know the acharya or guru to be me, Krishna says to Uddhava, and never slight him. Do not regard him as an ordinary mortal or find fault in him, for the guru is the sum total of the demigods. That is why I said guru bhakti that diminishes or abates has no value. Remember that the loss of devotion for Sri Guru and the resultant disregard is a great obstacle on the path of sadhana. So when he says that devotion is the faculty for transcendental potency, what he means is that true devotion is the medium by which the spiritual energy enters into a soul. In other words, it's the mercy of God. God pours His mercy into a person who has devotion. That is the faculty. And faculty means our intellectual faculties, right? We have this term, intellectual faculties. That means the ability to think or the ability to reason as a faculty. Faculty means an ability or a means. Devotion is the means for transcendental potency, or devotion is the ability. It provides the setting or the foundation so that transcendental potency can enter one. That's why we say the more a person has devotion, the more he becomes what we call empowered. You've heard this phrase? If we're very humble and have lots of bhakti, we're empowered. Empowered means in power. You have power. What is that power? Transcendental energy. You have potency. So if someone is a pure devotee, he has lots of power, spiritual potency. So pure devotee means he has that devotion, that faculty for the transcendental potency to come. Remember that loss of devotion for Sri Guru, loss of devotion, and the resultant disregard is an obstacle on the path of sadhana. In other words, we have to recover our devotion. If we lost it, we have to find it. And if we have disregard, we have to have regard. And these are obstacles in the path of devotion. If we start to diminish the position of our spiritual master, or think of him in relative terms, or disregard him, or disrespect him, and as I said, if we, then that's an obstacle. So we have to increase our respect for him. And then that was mentioned earlier, because that was Vaishnavi's question. That very same question came up about three questions ago. And he was saying that you have to go and fall at the feet of your Gurudev and actually reveal your mind to him. And the answer was there about three questions. So you have to go and meet with your spiritual master. You have to go see him and spend time with him, because you got too distant from him. When such a condition arises, you must go to the lotus feet of Sri Guru as soon as possible and try to spend time with like-minded devotees discussing topics of the Lord. So, this temporary worldliness in the consciousness will be destroyed, and you will become deeply fixed in your beloved Gurudev, and you will once more be able to love him as you had wished. The basis of the relationship between disciple and guru was infatuation, not real guru bhakti. So such an improper relationship, or foundation of relationship, will run amok, it'll crash. That's what he's saying. You'll come to the point where you lose your devotion and disregard, and you become offensive to the guru. So if you're already initiated and you're feeling those feelings, then what this acharya is saying, that you should go to your spiritual master and associate with him and hear from him and get close and hold on and get close to his lotus feet and try to reevaluate your relationship and try to increase your respect and your regard and your appreciation and start anew, start again on the right footing of actual bhakti to appreciate the great mercy the spiritual master, our spiritual master has given us, and try to actually cultivate that bhakti rather than just infatuation. Try to cultivate guru bhakti. You cultivate, that's what the other 13 says, you cultivate guru bhakti by associating with like-minded devotees. That means devotees who have bhakti. Like-minded means the right mind. They actually have guru bhakti for their guru. Or your god, in other words, you associate with your god brothers and god sisters who have guru bhakti. And you hear from them and you try to, you learn from them and try and say, and then you associate with them, your guru bhakti will increase. That's what acharyas often say. Gaudiya Mathacharyas would often say that about Prabhupada's disciples. They would say, Prabhupada's disciples, one thing about them, the reason they're so successful is because they have great guru bhakti. They're always saying, Jai Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. We're doing this for Prabhupada, book distribution for Prabhupada. And that is a fact. Especially in the older days, the disciples of Prabhupada, they had a lot of guru bhakti. Prabhupada said it, we do it. When we first came to the temple, we were, one of the first days, we were sitting there and we saw everyone in a line. They were all eating apples for breakfast. Apples and oatmeal. I told the story before, no? And so everyone is taking the apples and they're biting the apple. They're just peeling with their teeth and the edge of the apple. They're peeling, they're just chewing the skin of the apple. Like a little beaver or something. I was looking, what is this? Because we had studied nutrition in college and the skin of the apple has so much pectin and so much roughage and it's very good for all kinds of things you can say. So they're peeling it with their teeth and spitting in their left hand and then putting that on the plate, on the edge of the plate, some wax little paper plate they had. And I said, what's everybody doing? Everybody in line. It was all the brahmacharis. Ladies ate some other room. It's just all men in that room and some other room ladies eating. Prasadam, morning breakfast in Los Angeles temple. 100 devotees all going like that with the apple. And so Prabhupada said the skins are no good. The skins, you would only eat the skins of apple. Prabhupada said we don't eat it. But somehow or other, I was only like 2 days in the temple. I picked up the apple and it was, somehow or other by Krishna's arrangement. I said, oh, right. Prabhupada said we don't eat the skin. Okay. I just started eating like that and I didn't even know why because I had so much knowledge about the nutritional value of the skin that I'm sure that none of these devotees could even tell. I could tell the chemical makeup of it and everything because I had studied it in college. So it wasn't just I had to reject a lot of my materialistic learning because everything I learned is that this is very good for you and what to speak of ordinary experience when you eat an apple, you just eat the thing, you don't like peel the thing off with your teeth. And if you have a knife at home, maybe you'll peel it or something. But if you just get an apple, you just eat the apple. And if the skin's a little rough, you just spit it out or something. But deliberately peel the whole thing, and then you have this little apple. Then eat it. Well, Prabhupada said. So it's kind of like an example of the guru bhakti that we have so much devotion for Prabhupada. They have a lot of guru bhakti. Because of their guru bhakti, whatever they're getting from that. Because everything comes from this exchange of bhakti. Bhakti attracts bhakti. If you read Madhurya Kadambini, it begins with what is the cause of bhakti? Is it pious activities that creates bhakti? Is it charity that creates bhakti? That's a discussion. It says bhakti creates bhakti. Bhakti creates bhakti. So if you want bhakti, you have to get it from someone who has it. And you have some, so you send it out and it comes back. Like a boomerang. You throw it out, it comes back. You have a drop of bhakti and you put it into the ocean of bhakti. The guru is an ocean of bhakti. And then, because we say, prema bhakti, yahavite avidya vinash, we say, from him an ecstatic prema emanates. So from the ocean, so many waves are emanating, one after the other. The ocean never rests. The ocean has waves and they're always crashing on the beach. One, two, three. So that's what it means. From the ocean, waves are always emanating. Emanating means coming out or moving or coming out from. Emanating. From the ocean, the waves are coming out and then they're hitting the beach. Boom. So from the guru, from the actual prema bhakti, from the bona fide guru, advanced waves of prema are emanating. Prema bhakti jahavaite. From him, ecstatic prema emanates. So their waves are coming. And the disciple is like the beach. So if that beach has a little, if that disciple has some bhakti, then those waves of bhakti will be attracted to him. Bhakti attracts bhakti. So he'll receive those waves. If he has bhakti for his guru, he'll receive the bhakti from his guru.
That's the exchange. Or if you have your drop of bhakti and you put your drop into the ocean, say you're a drop of bhakti and you jump in the ocean, now you become an ocean of bhakti. You understand? You invest, say you're a drop and you jump in the ocean. You're still a drop, but now you're one in one sense with the whole ocean. So if you offer your bhakti to the guru, guru bhakti, then you enter his ocean of bhakti. And your bhakti will increase day by day by day. More and more and more. That is real guru bhakti. It should always increase. Question 21. The scriptures say that we must revere Sri Gurudev, or respect, or honor, Sri Gurudev as God Himself. But if at present we are not able to precisely have this God awareness of Him, then we can at least consider Him to be our most beloved friend, or not. Some of these questions seem a little repetitive, right? But the answers are different angles, so it will improve our understanding of the subject. Certainly, you must consider Sri Gurudev to be your dearmost heart's friend. This is explained in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, in the teachings of Varnashram Dharma. Narada Muni is explaining about the brahmacharya, brahmachari gurukule, vasantanto gurorhitam. He lives for the gurorhitam, for the benefit of the guru. Vasantantor, he controls his senses, and brahmachari gurukule, lives in the ashram of the guru, controls his senses, and he lives for the benefit of the guru. And it says, suridam, he said, surid guru surida. He says that the disciple should have a feeling of firm friendship for the spiritual master. Firm friendship. Nishta, this nishta, firm, a very strong friendship. You should consider the Gurudev to be your dearmost heart's friend. As we mentioned, like a relative, he's a friend, he's a brother, he's a father, but he's also God. That vision is there, both are there, all those things. But if it's only he's God, and it's all Aishvarya and awe and respect, then that creates too much distance. And it hardens the heart. The disciple's heart remains hard. And he remains fearful. He remains fearful of his guru. And his heart remains hard. Because I'm afraid of my guru. So he can't express the softness of friendship. He can't express the intimacy of his heart, or her heart. Because of too much awe and reverence, too much distance. And this is unfortunate. Have such a relationship with Guru. Look, the living being has no greater friend than Gurudev. If there is any place in this world where the living entities can find peace from the scorching fire of the threefold miseries, then it is at the footsoles of Sri Gurudev. There is no other place to find relief from this fire. You must always awaken the self-esteem of Sri Guru's obedient servant. When you do this, you will get great strength to advance on the path of sadhana. An invincible power, similar questions and similar answers, but a lot of different variations. An invincible power will come to the mind, and you will consider the temptations of lust and anger to be very trivial. None of these things will be able to move you from the path of sadhana anymore. Always remember that as soon as you forget that you are Sri Guru's obedient servant, you will become dominated by ahankar. You know what that is? False ego. And then you will have fallen onto the downward path. There is no well-wishing friend like Sri Gurudev. Gurudev is not a beggar after your wealth. He is a beggar after your simple and earnest heart. If you want to give Gurudev real happiness, then give him whatever he wants. He wants your heart to be earnest. Earnest means sincere, true. He just wants to see you as the embodiment of sincerity, nothing more. Therefore, let me, the Gurudev wants to see you give up all hypocrisy and crookedness. He wants to see you become simple and honest as a child. Become the embodiment of simplicity in front of your guru.
It says like that in the Bible, that you should become like a child before God. Simple and innocent, pure and meek and humble.
You will see that nothing will give the spiritual master more bliss than this.
Bliss than this. If you become simple, honest, that's a fact. Because if someone's actually completely pure and honest, I mean, at least in their dealings, we may have impurities within us due to our karma.
Remember that Gurudev's heart will blossom.
You know, blossom like a flower.
When he sees you giving up all hypocrisy and crookedness and becoming sincere and pure in front of him. When he sees the disciple giving up all hypocrisy and crookedness and becoming sincere and pure in front of him, the Gurudev does not demand anything else. He just wants to see that you somehow advance on the path of sadhana. Especially remember that on the day that you commit some abominable act, you know, abominable, sinful, bad, you are causing dreadful injury to Gurudev's divine body. Therefore, consider Sri Gurudev to be the dearmost heart's friend and carefully follow his instructions. Then you will advance on the path of sadhana.